You're listening to the Auburn Daily Show. I'm Zach Blackerby, Auburn baseball expert. Lindsey Crosby joining me, expert on all things. But look, it is Auburn baseball season as the Auburn Tigers getting things going. Now at 4 o'clock on Friday, that moved up. They announced that it's going to be a little chilly, Lindsey. But when you look at this upcoming season for Auburn baseball, let's tackle the biggest question that every Auburn baseball fan wants to know. How in the world do you replace Sonny D from a year ago?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right? And I think kind of tying into some of the fan frustration about this Auburn team not being ranked, I think part of that comes back to there's not an obvious one-for-one replacement for Sonny DeShera on the roster. When you look at what he did last year, and Butch told us when spring started, he didn't necessarily know if Sonny was going to be able to do that or not. Like he knew Sonny would be good.
There's no way you could expect that. I mean, he got on base like every other at bat.
Yeah. Batting average of .383, on base percentage of .549.
Unreal.
Literally better than every other at bat he got on base. Slugging of .777. 22 home runs, and had the highest walk rate in college baseball last year. Ended up with 68 walks. So really should have gotten one more somehow.
Yeah.
But I think the thing for Auburn baseball this year is you're not going to have a 1-1 replacement for Sonny DeShera, but you're going to recreate him in the aggregate. There were so many games last year. If you'll kind of think back and remember some of these outings, a Sonny DeShera type stat line on a Saturday would be 1-for-2 with a home run, a single, and 3 walks.
Right.
Like that's what Sonny DeShera did. And it's because you had issues specifically finding a cleanup hitter for a good portion of the year and getting protection for him in the lineup. This is a much deeper lineup this year, and you get full seasons from some of these breakout offensive performers. So Bobby Pierce didn't get into the lineup until LSU weekend. And Bobby Pierce ended up being second on the team in home runs and was your cleanup hitter by the time you got to Omaha. And so... yeah, 284, 350, 562 is a great slash line.
Right.
Extrapolate that out. Instead of saying, oh, yeah, he started 38 games, imagine he starts 64 games. You know, and what else he can do, you kind of would project him out to be close to 20 home runs, which is where Sonny DeShera was. You get Nate LaRue for an entire season. He struggled a little bit offensively last year, 211, 272, 382. But anybody who's watched games in the fall or spring or is going to be watching on Friday, you'll see a very interesting stance and setup at the plate offensively from Nate LaRue. Very open. His front foot is back, and he's holding the bat almost like parallel to the plate. But what he's doing is, as a right-handed hitter, normally your left eye is what's pointing at the pitcher. He found out over the summer that he's right-eye dominant. And so he's adjusted the stance so that he can get that dominant eye facing the pitcher, and his offensive production in fall and spring has absolutely taken off.
When you see a new stance like this, a player adjusting and playing a different style, does that, I mean, I feel like it could go either way, Lindsey, right? I mean, sometimes I could totally change the game. Sometimes it almost confuses them. I mean, do you feel good about that moving forward?
The big thing whenever I see a big mechanical change like that is I want to understand why it's happening. Because there's sometimes you'll see a pitcher's arm slot all of a sudden be different. And it's like, okay, the arm slot's different. Why is it different?
Yeah,
is it you dropped down because you were trying to relieve stress on a shoulder or something? Or is it you wanted more effectiveness on your pitches? Same thing for Nate LaRue. I saw it. I was kind of curious. I asked him about it, and he explained the right eye dominance. And then you can see the results. So there's a little bit of, before I worry about something like that, I always want to find out why it happened. And that is why I think it's going to pay benefits this year. And then when you look at some of the guys you brought in, outfielder Justin Kirby from Kent State, first baseman Cooper McMurray from Kansas, are both going to be guys that will bring you more power than the guys that they're replacing in the lineup, with the exception of Cooper. He's not going to replace Sonny DeShera, but he's going to bring you more power than some of your other options at first base. And then I don't think you can I don't think you can overstate the value of true freshman Ike Irish at DH. Gabe Gross told me last week that Ike Irish has one of the best batter's eyes, if not the best batter's eye on the entire team as a true freshman.
As a freshman, yeah.
As a true freshman. And so, obviously, why he was considered a top 50 draft prospect going into last year's draft. Auburn gets him on campus. And they want his bat in the lineup as much as possible, to the point where I've seen him taking reps at first base, obviously the DH as well. It's just something where they want Nate LaRue and Ike Irish in the lineup as much as possible.
Sure.
And so you're working on ways to do that. Another guy that's going to be a surprising source, I think, of offense that we haven't necessarily talked a lot about is Ryan Dial, the backup catcher. We saw him. They did some work last year to try to get his bat into the lineup. We saw him play some left field, both at home and away. He's a catcher by trade, so you feel a little better about it at home than away. Mm-hmm. But we've seen him at first base a little bit this year as well. His hard hit percentage for fall and for spring, as going into last weekend's, you know, Friday and Sunday games, was at 83%. So, which was best on the team. Yeah. When he made contact, it was quality contact. And so he's taken a step to another level offensively. And the big thing is you have all of this newfound, or you have all of this good offensive potential, but when you stack them up, it makes it very difficult to have like what happened to Sonny, where they would just automatically walk Sonny. We'd rather deal with whoever's in the four hole. They don't scare us. Now you walk Bobby Pierce, there's veteran Casey Howell. Yeah. There's Ike Irish. You walk him, there's Nate LaRue. You walk him, there's Cole Foster. This lineup is just so much deeper. There's Justin Kirby. There's Cooper McMurray. And so that 1-7 is just, on the whole, is much better as far as power potential than it was last year. And I think it makes your entire lineup more dynamic. You can see some natural improvements for everybody. And the end result is you recreate the production of a Sonny DeShera by improvements in everybody in the lineup to get that same level of production.
Do you think Auburn's offense will score more runs than it did a year ago, if you had to predict that right now?
They scored 455 last year. I think that you could see them score more runs. The thing that I don't quite know about is the out-of-conference schedule this year is a little bit tougher, and I think some of that last year was skewed by that four-game series against Rhode Island, where you scored a ton of runs, as well as...
Remember when that Rhode Island guy like lit us up?
He was very upset because we were not too
impressed. They were the worst baseball team I've ever seen. And Rhode Island baseball super fan reached out. I was like, that's disrespectful. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. His son was on the team, and he took it a little personally. He deleted all of the comments when I pointed that out. I don't know what was up with that. But Auburn's out-of-conference schedule, with the exception of Florida A&M, is going to be – like, these are all really good teams relative to what a lot of other schools schedule. And so your RPI is going to be – I would guess top 10 or top 15 in the country. And so you replace that four-game Rhode Island series with three games against University of Southern California. Obviously, you have Indiana coming in this weekend. You have a home-and-home against Georgia Tech. So you have a tougher slate non-conference-wise. Your total number of runs may not equal that 455 and 65 games like you had last year, but I think it'll be closer than we're all expecting when you think about take this lineup and subtract Sonny DeShera and Blake Rambush and Brody Moore, and what happens there. I think it'll be closer than we expect.
Yeah, look, and like Auburn baseball's roster, there's always a bunch of changes, and you want stability in your lineup. And our friends at NordVPN can give you that security and stability that you need. If you're on the internet, which if you're watching or listening to this right now, you certainly are on the interwebs, and you need to stay safe online as it is an ever-growing difficulty. And obviously you could be exploited by hackers. There's a lot of stuff out there right now. NordVPN, it allows you to change your IP address, makes you harder to track, and it secures your privacy. And luckily, NordVPN is giving Auburn Daily listeners and viewers and readers a special deal, and we will put that link in the episode description down below. But thank you so much to NordVPN for partnering with Auburn Daily. The pitching staff, Lindsey, you're replacing like 3/4 of the production. You get Joseph Gonzalez back. You get to slot him up, move him up earlier in the weekend, which I think is exciting. You called Gonzo being good like 30 years ago. You nailed it. But you know, I think we feel good about Chase Alsup kind of being that number two guy. What happens after that?
Yeah, so like you said, kind of confirming, you're going to have Alsup and Gonzo as your first two starters. There were some questions about Gonzo for week one because he had a recurrence of that scapula shoulder issue from last offseason. He threw two innings on Sunday, looked good. Velocity was the same. Rust wasn't really there. Five batters he'd faced. So you're going to have Alsup starting game one on Friday. You're going to have Gonzo starting game two on Saturday. And this is something we saw Auburn do last year with Joseph Gonzalez. He is your best pitcher. He is your number one guy in your rotation. But by putting him on Saturday, you have some options as far as if you win game one, you can take the series with your best pitcher. If you lose game one, you can salvage the series with your best pitcher. And then it gives you flexibility as you move into later weeks. If you want to move him to Sunday, it's a one-day disruption to his schedule. If you want to move him to Friday, it's a one-day disruption to his schedule. Outside of that, that third spot, that's really the big one. A lot of talented freshmen, some transfers coming in. The guys that I've seen most often competing directly with one another for that third spot have been two true freshmen, lefty Zach Crotchfeldt from New Jersey, and then lefty Drew Nelson from Troy. And this weekend, you're going to see Drew Nelson get the start. These two guys, they're both lefties, they're both freshmen, but they kind of do different things. Crotchfeldt has more of that traditional, you know, fastball sits 93 or 94. He's got a curveball as well. He throws in the low 80s. He has a two-seamer that, you know, sits low 90s. And it's very much, it's the beginnings of a power profile, right? He's up there trying to blow stuff past you. He's up there using late run on some of these pitches to make you swing and miss. Drew Nelson, by comparison, is very much a, you know, the velocity's not as crisp. He sits high 80s on his fastball, but he's very, very good at understanding, you know, this is what I can do to get weak contact and let my defense play. And he's really leaned into the, yeah, I'm not going to blow this by you, but I've got this wicked looking curveball with good bend. I've got this fastball that likes to move around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to just not let you ever get comfortable. I'm going to throw, I have a slider and a curveball. Slider's high 70s, curveball's low 70s. Fastball again, low 80s or high 80s. I'm just going to make you uncomfortable and you're never going to get solid contact on anything. I watched him. The coaching staff has been working with both of those guys in particular, trying to get them to be more willing to attack the strike zone and pitch to contact versus trying to nibble around the strike zone and get a bunch of chase and things like that, to the point where in one of the squad games, they made a rule for the squad game, two balls was a walk. And the idea was, we don't want you to just pitch outside and up and try to like get them to chase something. We want you to throw in the strike zone. And with
is that a pitch count thing that they're trying to do?
Wasn't a pitch count thing. It was it was more of a mindset thing. And I asked Schoenrock, I was like, hey, you know, is that something where you want them to mechanically learn to throw strikes or is it a mindset? He's like, it's very much a mindset. We want them to understand you can lean into the good defense you have behind you. One of Butch Thompson's mantras, dominate the routine play. And when they made that change in that squad game, Drew Nelson goes out there 4 scoreless innings because he's like, yeah, I'll throw you this curveball, but it's going to break late underneath your bat. You're going to roll over it and it's going to be a weak grounder to second. And so he'll get the start on Sunday.
So I assume you're going to see different guys throughout the non-cons part of the schedule start that third game. I mean, Butch Thompson's very much a coach that does not mind kind of having position battles going into the season just to get things right by conference play, which I don't think is unusual. But Do you see, like, whoever doesn't win this number three spot, do you see them being the midweek starter, or do you see them kind of finding a role in some middle relief type thing on a Friday or a Saturday or a Sunday?
So those two freshmen, you know, Crotchfield and Nelson, I think the one that doesn't be, like, is not the starter for game three in whatever given series, he's going to be one of the primary options as a piggyback, especially early in the season. This coaching staff likes to pair two pitchers together, and it may be pitchers that do different things from a visual perspective. So you take a Chase Alsup, a hard-throwing righty, and you pair him with somebody like a Drew Nelson, a softer-tossing lefty that's throwing to contact, with the idea being it messes up hitters' timing, it's a different look, it's a different style midway through a game. You're going to be doing a lot of that. And then some of the veterans that you have, a Tanner Bowman, for instance, a Christian Heberholtz, these guys, they're going to be more of your middle relief, spot start, midweek starter kind of guys. These two freshmen, they want to keep them on that weekend schedule. And they've told us, you'll see Crotchfield coming in relief as a piggyback on a Sunday, and then maybe the next week he's a starter and somebody else is his piggyback. Just simply because they think ultimately your rotation, like as soon as next season, could be Nelson, Murphy, Crotchfield, also for your four guys, all throw into Ike Irish with Chris Stanfield in center field. And the future is very bright in that situation for Auburn baseball.
Yeah, that's exciting to think about. So as far as reasonable expectations, Lindsay, let's wrap up with this.
Before we get to that real quick, sure. One of the other common questions that I've been getting a lot is about the bullpen. Because you lost Blake Burkhalter to the Atlanta Braves, and you lost Carson Skipper to the Rockies. And so the question is, like, who is your go-to closer now? Because you don't have Burkhalter and Skipper.
Right.
Similar situation to replacing Sonny DeShera. It's going to be a replace him in the aggregate. They've four guys that they've identified as these are the four horsemen in the stable. These are the guys that we are going to count on in high leverage situations. John Armstrong, the sophomore sidearmer who we've written
about.
Came
on late last year. He looked good.
He was in the garage for a while. He came out, looked much better. He's working on his pitch mix. He's adding a four-seamer, trying to get a little more pure velocity on that because he throws a two-seamer and that UFO, maybe UFO is the wrong way to describe this week to describe the slider, but he throws that frisbee slider and then a two-seamer. Add a four-seamer to it. He has a closer's arsenal right there. And I think by the end of the season, John Armstrong is your closer. But lefty Tommy Vail, the veteran, Chase Isbell, the veteran, Will Cannon, those four guys are going to be the high leverage relievers. But again, we'll figure out as the season goes on who's going to end up being the closer. Will Cannon will get the first shot to close this weekend. If we have a safe situation, I expect Will Cannon to be the guy they call on. But by the end of the season, I think John Armstrong's going to be the guy simply because I love the pitch mix. I love the slider gives him legitimate swing and miss stuff. And that's kind of the thing you don't have a ton of in this bullpen right now.
Reasonable expectations for Auburn baseball, not ranked by any of the major publications, despite being an Omaha team a year ago. But like we've discussed today, a lot of questions, a lot of guys you got to replace. So you kind of get where they're coming from. And if they take care of business early, I got a feeling they'll find themselves in the top 25. But reasonable expectations in a very loaded conference, Lindsay, yet again, where should Auburn fans kind of expect this team to be when it comes to their pecking order in the SEC?
So I expect Auburn to finish in the top half of the SEC West and to be a postseason team. The big question is going to be, can Auburn get high enough in the polls and in the rankings to be one of the 16 teams that hosts a regional? Yeah. I think, you know, from your likely outcomes, a two seed is probably most likely. But if Auburn can get into that number one seed, the key series to watch for that is going to be home versus Texas A&M and home versus LSU, both preseason top five teams. And Auburn's gotten really lucky with the scheduling because Texas A&M, as we talked about on Auburn Daily when we talked about the schedule, Texas A&M is here for A-Day weekend. The Frank Thomas statue is being dedicated that weekend. A lot of people will be in town, should help with attendance. And then LSU in May is here during graduation weekend. another scenario where there should be tons of attendance, should be sellouts for all three games. Operation Atmosphere should be up and loud and going. And if Auburn can knock off those top-rated teams at home and win those series, and then just play...
LSU lost a weekend starter like 2 days ago, didn't they?
LSU lost one of their... I think he was their Saturday guy. Lost him for the year to Tommy John. That's the kind of thing that starts happening right now. We had our own TJ injury. Thankfully, it was somebody who wasn't necessarily going to have a huge role in year one and been bossy. But still, it's definitely a hurt. Totally. Still hurts to lose him. But LSU did take a hit there. And part of it's just their offense is so good that you still have to think they're the favorite. But if Auburn can steal, if Auburn can upset those two teams at home and just continue their home dominance where they do really well in Plainsman Park. They were 25-9 last year in Plainsman, whereas they were 12-9 away from Plainsman. If they can continue that dominance at home, including winning those series, they should be able to host a regional. But if not, you're looking at probably a number two seed and going on the road.
So if you're an Auburn baseball fan, auburndaily.com is your place for everything Auburn baseball this weekend, but the entire season. Lindsay will be there at Plainsman Park this weekend. We'll have watch articles pumping out. We'll have instant takeaways and reactions, live blogs. We'll have our photographer there. We will be your Auburn baseball spot. Didn't leave anything out, Lindsay, at auburndaily.com.
I think that's just about everything. We'll have series previews for every weekend series coming up. Yep. So not a lot of places like to kind of cover the series coming up, just what Auburn's going to do when it's over. But we'll have those. I'll have midweek notebooks, kind of some of the things that I've noticed, people I've talked to, things like that, as well as the MLB draft prospects for some of these guys as we get farther into the season. My breakout player, who I think is going to end up being one of the higher draft picks for this Auburn roster, surprisingly, not Joseph Gonzalez, not Ooh. Cole Foster.
Ooh.
My choice is Nate LaRue.
How about that?
I think Nate LaRue will be probably the first player from this roster drafted in the 2023 MLB draft.
You can follow Lindsay on Twitter at Crosby Baseball, and you can also listen to his podcast, Locked On MLB Prospects, and you can listen to my show, Locked On Auburn. Follow me on Twitter at Z Blackerby. All of our stuff written at auburndaily.com.